The Weekly Connect on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, this is The Weekly Connect on RNIB Connect Radio. I'm Stephen Scott, your host as always. Good to have your company and welcome along to the show this hour. This is the programme that talks about the issues that matter to you as blind or partially sighted people. And on this week's episode, we're going to be focusing on the recent annual general meeting at RNIB. It's a great chance to learn about the work of the charity over the last year and to find out what's coming up soon. It's also a great chance to hear some of the questions that were asked by RNIB Connect community members on the panel that were there at the event in London. More on all of that to come this hour on our AGM special of The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect. The Weekly Connect. On RNIB Connect Radio.
We're going to start this hour hearing from RNIB's new CEO, Sally Harvey. Now, in her speech to the annual general meeting at RNIB, she talked about some of the challenges the charity has faced over the last year and how the new RNIB Connect community has begun to thrive.
Okay. All yours, Sally.
Thank you very much, Kevin, and thank you for your applause there. Thank you. Let me begin. So, yes, I'm delighted to have been appointed as the permanent chief executive for RNIB. And as has already been said, I've been in the acting position for the last year, six months of which, of course, relate to the year that we're all here to discuss and to report upon. And I have to say that it has been a year of great change here at RNIB, a year of challenges, a year of transformation, a year of growth, and a year of learning. Our biggest challenge has been the urgent and dual need to secure a sustainable financial future for our organisation and modernise the way we deliver our services in order that we can meet the ever-changing and increasing need of blind and partially sighted people, the community, of course, that we exist to support. It is indeed quite a hostile external environment, both for blind and partially sighted people, and for charities more generally. It's a challenge we've tackled head on. We've taken what I would describe as a 360-degree approach, so we've taken a very rounded approach to the challenges that we've had. This is to put us in the best possible position to meet this increased demand. We've looked at every aspect of our organisation and created a wide-ranging transformation programme that is continuing into this year. That programme has included an overhaul of our structures, our strategy, and our financial management in order to make sure that together they put us in a place of having everything we need to make the changes to deliver much-needed services to you, our community. In the year, we have also made the bold move to transform the RNIB group of charities by merging Action for Blind People and RNIB Charity into one charity under the RNIB name. I talked about the dual need to secure a sustainable future and build a new way of delivering our services. So I'd like to just say a little bit more about that financial transformation plan, albeit that you will be hearing more from our Vice Chair after me to talk through the detail of the financials in the plan. But we have recognised that our financial trajectory was not sustainable. We had huge ambition, we still do. We wanted to grow the organisation and our ambition was to grow that at quite a fast pace in order that we could meet that challenge head on. However, that growth has not been delivered at the pace we would have liked. And therefore, we have had to make some difficult decisions in some cases to change the way we do our business. We have to ensure that as we approach our 150th year next year, actually RNIB is well placed to be here to support the community we exist to support for many, many more years to come. And having a sustainable business plan in that respect is essential. Margaret, like I say, will support and will go through with you the financial details when she arrives to talk through that plan. I talked about an organisation that needed to be ready for the future, We're introducing new ways of working alongside new systems and technology, investing in our people and the community of blind and partially sighted people is key. Our aim is to dramatically increase the opportunities to both give and receive support. We know that our community wants to be part of your organisation. It's an organisation of blind and partially sighted people. We know that community wants to give support to each other, to the community, and to support its organisation as much as that community needs the services and support of the organisation. We are changing into a different organisation. We want to ensure that we are there for everyone, and we know, it's said, that blind and partially sighted people are first and foremost people, and actually that means that individual needs vary depending on the circumstances and the point on the journey that anyone is at. So of course RNIB is there for children and parents. We're also there for older people. We're there for people who have lived with sight loss all their life. We're there for people who have lived sighted during their life and lose sight later in life. And of course, we know that sight loss, again, means very different things to different people, with only 7% of people living with sight loss having no sight at all. And the spectrum of sight loss means that someone's experience who has no sight at all may be very different to those who are using some residual vision. So the needs of that community are indeed diverse. Our challenge is to make sure that we are genuinely there for everyone and that everyone feels that RNIB is their organisation. So in that context, that change, that journey that we're on, I am delighted to also share with you that actually 2016-17 was indeed a year of growth, that we did reach many more people than we have done previously. The number of direct customers we supported over 16-17 was up by 12%, and that number is now at 107,000 customers. Our sight loss advisors, also known as ECLOs or Eye Clinic Liaison Officers, have supported 20,900 people in the eye clinics. That's a 9% increase on the year before. A much valued service, putting RNIB at the very place where people are told that devastating news that actually they are losing their sight. So we want to make sure that someone is there at that particular point. Without that, we hear time and time again how people are going home just simply unaware of the support that is available to them to actually be able to carry on living very successful lives. So yeah, we know the difference that service makes, and I'm delighted about that 9% improvement. With the help of our UK advice service, 16,200 customers have claimed over £29 million worth of benefits. That is benefits that simply would not be paid to people without our support. That income, we all know, makes such a life-changing impact, enabling people to make choices about living their lives in the way that they wish to lead them. So £29 million that would not have been received by blind and partially sighted people without that support. And we've helped over 200 people with sight loss to find new jobs, while supporting another 700 to stay in work. That is an area we need to do more on. We know that employment is actually deteriorating. The levels of employment is getting worse. Only 25% of working age adults are now employment in terms of people with sight loss. And actually that number deteriorates to only 1 in 10 where someone has no sight at all who is blind. So yeah, that is an area that we do need to make sure that we are there using all opportunities there are to support people to retain or gain employment. So that gives you a feel for some of the services in numbers, and I think you'll get a feel from that in terms of the impact that we make, that impact in terms of the eye clinic liaison service, in terms of that immediate emotional and practical support that's so vital, and then support in terms of employment, in terms of benefit advice, moving into the numbers of customers benefiting from our services. Since Talking Books went free, we have also had a record year in terms of the number of sign-ups to our Talking Books service. That number is nearly 50,000 people now. So a really growing, popular service with an ever-growing number of titles available to blind and partially sighted people. The other statistic I'm really proud of is the growth in our Connect community. We're connecting and engaging now with over 28,000 people. And I'm proud that ideas generated by that community have been taken hold of by RNIB and brought to life through campaigns like How I See and The Cane Explained. We know these campaigns really help to share that message to the wider population, actually to help understand what actually sight loss actually means. We know that many, many of the public generally don't understand what it means to lose your sight. And it's really important that actually if we're to make the change that we need to make in the world, that actually there is a greater appreciation, a greater recognition of what it means to be blind or partially sighted. So that community is generating those ideas. We're pushing content out. We're sharing stories. Stories are so powerful, aren't they? It's the way that people connect over generations. In fact, history tells us how stories are passed down. So stories in real, told by real people in their own voice is proving a really effective way of changing the way that RNIB, our community, is sharing their voice and making sure it's heard. And of course, actually, growth in terms of how RNIB supports and works with blind and partially sighted people is also evident through our work around advocacy, campaigning, influencing, and partnership work, pushing others to make the world a more inclusive place for someone living with sight loss. So whilst our primary focus is supporting people living with sight loss, we also do have an important role in preventing avoidable sight loss. In the last year, we have reached hundreds of thousands of new people with important messages about looking after their eyes by promoting regular sight tests. We've done this in partnership with organisations like Specsavers and taken the opportunity of that in terms of press and TV advertising. All this helps to raise the profile of people living with sight loss. Because of that work, our eye health information pages on our website have seen a leap in the number of visitors to 1.37 million. So that's 1.37 individual people have all visited RNIB's website just to look at the eye health information that we have. That's 36% increase in 1 year. So it really starts to evidence there, doesn't it, kind of the important message about, you know, looking after your sight, raising the importance of eyes, and actually in doing so, raising the profile of people living with sight loss. So I will now start to conclude, but actually where I left off, that 16-17 has been a year of great change in RNIB, a year of challenges, transformation, growth, and learning. On a personal note, and Kevin, thank you for referencing it. I was indeed delighted to be given the opportunity last year of the acting chief exec position. And just 2 weeks ago, and following an extensive and robust recruitment process.
And expensive, it's all right.
That as well, maybe. But absolutely right. A good, an extensive and robust process. Actually, I was delighted and honoured to be offered the post permanently. I've worked for RNIB for 8 years. The passion and commitment I have to RNIB stems from the belief that I have in the community of blind and partially sighted people. I so believe that by working as one with that community, and that community has to include all of us, primarily you're an audience today of Connect members, you already understand that, you see the value of being part of something bigger. But for me, that community really comes alive by us genuinely all working together. That's RNIB's nearly 2,000 staff, our 5,000 volunteers, our growing Connect members of, you know, nearly 30,000 now. But actually, what of the other kind of thousands who are receiving services from us? What about our partners? What about kind of, you know, the people who actually give much valued support in terms of friends and family? Actually, wouldn't the difference that we are able to make if we are coming together as one community is immense? And that's what drives me, that sense of that opportunity still to be seized. You know, kind of there is absolutely, we're going in the right direction, but getting that right is the thing that's going to make the biggest difference. And that's what motivates me. A world which, like I said, actually a world without barriers for blind and partially sighted people. That's what we've got to strive for. And as I'm starting to work now with the board, looking ahead in terms of, you know, as we're coming up to, like I said, that 150th birthday, it's an opportunity to both reflect back on what's gone before and actually what a significant change 150 years makes, let's face it. But actually, what's the world we want for the next 150 years? What's the vision for that different world? Yeah, we have to create that together. And the only way we're going to deliver that change is by working together. So that's my message as I close my update for the year. It is a challenging year. We've had to make some difficult changes. But ultimately, it's all about positioning us to work differently, to work with community, to work together to make the biggest difference and make every day better for everyone affected by sight loss.
Thank you very much.
That was the new CEO of RNIB, Sally Harvey, speaking there to those attending the charity's annual general meeting in London. Now, as you might expect, there were a lot of questions asked of the panel, which included the new chair of RNIB, Ellie Southwood, and Scott Lynch from RNIB Solutions. First up was a question to CEO Sally Harvey about the future of RNIB's physical locations, following concerns that the charity would not be as reachable in person in the future.
What we know from the evidence that we have is that customers aren't able to generally reach us if we are more than 20 miles away from them in terms of a physical base. So what that means is that actually the vast majority of people across the UK don't live within 20 miles of one of our physical bases and therefore are potentially at risk of not receiving a service from us because of the approach we've taken, which has been a very kind of bricks and mortar approach, if I could call it that. We've therefore taken the view that we need to change the way we deliver services so that we are able to reach people in ways that work for them wherever they live in the UK. It's very important to us that RNIB is equitable in the way that we provide services and support. So given that, and even like I said, if there wasn't any financial reason why it would make sense to look at our property portfolio, we are looking at it, and therefore it is quite likely that there will be additional rationalisation of our property portfolio, that we will sell property where it makes sense to do so in order that income can be invested in services and reaching more people. In terms of any income received, so it comes in as income, but we would not wish to use that to support a operating budget because that isn't sustainable. It's kind of one-off. And that, therefore, is not something that we want to be built into our annual operating budget for exactly that reason. So what I'm suggesting, therefore, is that there are a number of things that need to be taken into account here, and that includes how we deliver services to people, as well as holistically looking at our financial position.
Selling the RNIB's box at the Royal Albert Hall was a decision a lot of members were not particularly happy about. Director of Solutions, Scott Lynch, had this to say.
The move to sell the box wasn't an easy decision to make. However, the money received from the sale of the box will enable ongoing investment in other areas of our vital work, supporting blind and partially sighted people, including making music accessible through professional musicians, helping children who want to study music get access to music, and to maintain a large and diverse accessible range of music we do through our library. The box was left at RNIB in 1929, and there isn't any ongoing obligation to retain the box. RNIB would never act outside the terms, those specified by an individual who has been kind enough to leave us a gift. But in 2017, the world is a very different place, and there are lots of demands on our services, and therefore we thought it was right to sell the box and invest that money elsewhere. We have got agreement with the Royal Albert Hall for the next 10 years from next year. Provide 500 free tickets each year for the next 10 years. We're currently working out with them the best way to distribute those without creating a big administration burden again. So actually one of the thoughts is using our Connect community to offer those tickets out. We're trying to work through those details now and we'll communicate those before the end of the year. The second question was around the British film industry and audio description of films in cinemas. So actually before I give some specific information about the state of the film industry in the UK, it should be noted there's currently no legislation covering audio description in cinemas. Actually, all of the work that's been done on audio description is through our efforts working with film distributors, cinema exhibitors, and technology providers. So the latest full year for statistics I have is 2016, and there were 393 English language films released in the UK. Of those, 170 were audio described. That includes all of the top 20 British co-produced films and 17 of the top 20 independent produced films. Of those that aren't audio described, actually the large proportion is they're limited release for a short period or very low grossing films, less than £1 million. But actually we continue to find ways to get over the barriers. So actually one of the barriers for limited release or low value films is the infrared technology in cinemas provide audio description. We've been working with technology providers on an app that syncs with the film automatically. We've tested that, a limited test here in London. Actually, we're now working with the film distributors to do a nationwide test of that so that audio description can be used in any cinema throughout the UK.
The decision in August to stop running the Vision Hotels was something many members of the Connect community were concerned about. Now, the RNIB's Director of Services, Miriam Martin, had this to say.
I think I'll probably start by saying that this wasn't an easy decision. It was a decision made by the Action for Blind People board at the time. And over years before that decision was actually made, we had looked at lots of different ways to try and continue to operate the hotels in the best possible way that we could. And I'm sure you'll be familiar with the fact that we opened up to sighted people, we've tried loyalty schemes, but we were unable to continue to invest in the hotels in the level that they needed. And also, we were beginning to see a real decline in the number of people with sight loss staying with us. So the decision was a really difficult one. The Action Board at the time were really clear with me in terms of what an appropriate outcome would be. So that wasn't just about being the right outcome in terms of value, but also that we worked hard to make sure that whatever happened to those hotels and whoever then took them on would continue to welcome people with sight loss and guide dog owners. I'm really pleased to say that we were able to sell the Lauriston to Western College earlier in the year, who have honoured the commitment to continue with the bookings that people have made, and they are very keen to continue to welcome people with sight loss and guide dog owners into the future. In terms of the other two hotels, so the one at Tynmouth and Windermere, those are actually owned by Guide Dog, so ultimately the decision will be theirs to make. But so far, progress has been really excellent in terms of conversations we're having with potential buyers. We're doing that very much in partnership with Guide Dogs, and conversations that are being held at the moment very much include them trading in future and that, and then continuing to be open to and welcoming of people with sight loss, including guide dog owners. So that's kind of where we are with the Vision Hotels at the moment. I think what I would say, though, is that it really is our belief that anybody with sight loss, whether they're a guide dog owner or not, should be welcomed at any hotel, wherever that is in the UK, and that shouldn't just be limited to those that are run by a charity. So a lot of the work that we'll be doing with our service teams going forward will be to try and work with other hoteliers where that's appropriate to do so, work with individuals where we know there are issues to try and make more hotels and more holidays available, and more importantly, welcoming people with sight loss.
Finally, we'll hear from Fazile Hardy, Director of Advocacy and the Deputy Chief Executive of the RNIB.
So I've got a question from Christine Cottam, who isn't here today. And Christine's question was, you know, while she recognises that local authorities need challenging, she also thought that other institutions need challenging, because as blind and partially sighted people, we get a raw deal from quite a lot of them, and she actually mentioned the police in particular. We do challenge local authority practice. The main three priority areas at the moment are around improving services for children and young people, because we've noticed a deterioration. Our evidence is showing us that support services are failing young, blind and partially sighted people. The second area is around streets. We continue to see shared space schemes, or schemes that aren't even called shared space, where you have a levelling of the curb and the road. And that's the second big area we're challenging local authorities on. And the third area is continuing our work to make sure that there are appropriate vision rehabilitation services, which they are legally obliged to provide. So those are the three priorities. In terms of Christine's point about other institutions, yes, well, as blind and partially sighted people, we know that there's not many aspects of our life where we don't need to challenge, but RNIB can't prioritise all of them. So our strategy really is to build that capacity within RNIB Connect so that blind and partially sighted people, with our support, can lead some of these struggles at the local level, whether that's with police or retailers or banks or whoever. They actually prioritise what they want to fight for, and we give them the right toolkits, the right training, the right support.
If you'd like to find out how to get involved in your local Connect community, go to www.rnib.org.uk/connect or call 0303 123 9999.
Those were some of the questions that were asked of the panel at this year's AGM at RNIB. Coming up next, you will hear from the charity's new chair, Ellie Southwood, on what she hopes will be her part in the future of the organisation.
The Weekly Connect. The Weekly Connect. On RNIB Connect Radio.
Join RNIB Connect and become part of a wider and stronger community led by blind and partially sighted people. Membership is free, and it's the best way to keep in touch with things that are of interest and help to you. You'll receive Connect Magazine, our membership publication, in your chosen format, as well as having the chance to be amongst thousands of like-minded blind and partially sighted people, friends, families, and supporters. You'll also be able to take part in and organise social activities in your area, campaign for change, and improve the lives of people with little or no sight, and get help from our dedicated RNIB Connect support team. It couldn't be easier to join RNIB Connect. Simply complete the online form at rnib.org.uk or join over the phone by calling 0303 1234 555.
After years of campaigning, it's here. Live in England? Thanks to NHS England's Accessible Information Standard, all information you receive from health and adult social care providers now has to be available in a format you can read. This means that all of those appointment letters, leaflets, letters about treatment and conditions, as well as information to do with your medication and prescriptions, now have to be available in your preferred format. RNIB is encouraging everyone to let their GP know of their preferred format, whether large print, audio, braille, or email, so that it's flagged on people's records and shared with other departments and specialists to ensure you get information in your format. For more information and to find out how you can let your GP know which format you'd prefer to hear from them in, visit rnib.org.uk/needittoreadit or call the campaigns team on 0207 391 2123.
Tune in for vibrant vocals with me, Elizabeth Capener, on RNIB Connect Radio. From classical, a cappella, musicals and pop, Vibrant Vocals plays music from some of the best singers in the world. Vibrant Vocals, Tuesdays at 9 p.m. and Saturdays at 4 p.m. on RNIB Connect Radio.
RNIB Connect magazine is out once again, and it is new and improved. After feedback from the Connect community, the magazine is bigger and better, aiming to reach more people and deliver the most useful stories and news. RNIB Connect magazine is published by RNIB every 3 months for everyone affected by sight loss. Full of articles, tips and inspiration, Connect magazine is completely free and available in various formats including Braille, large print and audio CD. Join RNIB today to receive your free copy of Connect magazine. Visit www.rnib.org.uk/community/register or call 0303 1234 555.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
This is The Weekly Connect, the show where you get the chance to discuss the issues that matter to you as blind or partially sighted people. Now, you can always get in touch with the programme at any time by emailing theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. That email address again, theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. We always love to hear from you and hear what you've got to say on the issues that matter to you. And you could be on this programme next week. Yes, you could be. Simple as this. Get in touch with us. Tell us three topics that you would like to talk about, and you could be discussing them right here with myself and Joe Barclay right here on RNIB Connect Radio. But this week, we are giving you the chance to catch up on the latest from RNIB's annual general meeting held in London recently. Now, earlier, we heard from the new CEO, Sally Harvey, talking about the challenges that the organisation's faced this year and also her hopes for the future of the charity. Let's now hear from the new chair of RNIB, Ellie Southwood, on what she hopes for the future and how she plans to help make it happen.
I'm incredibly honoured and excited to be taking on the role of chair at what I think is genuinely a pretty unique time, and I'll talk a little bit about that, a little bit about what some of my priorities as your new chair will be, a little bit about the climate that we're working in and what we will be looking to our executives, Sally and the team, to be delivering for us over the coming year. So for those of you who don't know me, I have been a trustee of RNIB since 2010. I've held a number of roles on the board, and for the last couple of years, I've been vice chair while Kevin has been chair. So I am blind myself, and I'm really proud to be taking on the leadership of a board where 8 out of 10 of us are blind or visually impaired. And that's a really, really important thing. And we talk quite easily about it now, but through some of the work we've been doing looking at the last 150 years, what's really struck me is how recent, in fact, that is. So only very recently, people of a generation ahead of me fought very, very hard to get blind and partially sighted people into this organisation, never mind into anything else in society. That's a fantastic tradition to build on. And I think what excites me most is building on that to take leadership by blind and partially sighted people way, way beyond RNIB. It's about every aspect of society. And I really want to see whether it's in kind of local leadership roles, on health boards, just going out there and doing fantastic and interesting work, the role and visibility of us as a community increasing hugely. So we've been around for 150 years, and one of the things I've been pondering on this morning, actually, listening to my colleagues, is actually there's a question about whether we do want to be here in another 150. Many of the reasons we exist are because there are systematic injustices, I suppose, in society and in 21st century UK society, perhaps even more shockingly, where people who are blind or partially sighted are not getting a fair deal. Fazile mentioned the situation with children and young people, and I think we'd all agree that the quality of the education you get and the chances you get as you're growing up, the role models you have, the things you think you can achieve, hugely impact on the course of your life. So there are things which remain extremely unfair, frankly, in our society. And were we to resolve those, I suggest that that's our primary reason for being, rather than just perpetuating our own existence, although, of course, as long as we are needed, it's absolutely vital that we are as efficient, effective as we can be, and we've talked quite a bit about that already today. So one of the things about being 150 years old is thinking, well, what are the, you know, what are the issues that used to exist that, you know, are now resolved? And I don't know how many of you saw or heard about the play about Louis Braille that was put on earlier in the year, musical, in fact. And when I went to see it, I thought, well, isn't that, you know, amazing, really? It is only 150 years ago. The Braille was a new thing. And if you couldn't see, effectively, you couldn't read. And I thought, well, isn't that great? And we all love Braille, and it's now being digitised and being made more affordable, and that's an important thing. And great, that's solved. And then I thought, actually, it's not solved at all, is it? Because in the Instagram age, where pictures are being increasingly used, in an age where lots of communication, social media and website is done through graphics, and in an age where access to technology is sometimes expensive, actually there is a risk of exclusion still, and a risk of lacking access to information that is actually now just as prevalent as it was 150 years ago. What's changed is what our response to that needs to be. But whilst some of the problems of 150 years ago don't exist in their same form, I think we absolutely need to recognise that there are significant challenges for us to tackle. And to do that, we do need to change as an organisation, not just because, you know, it's a good thing to do, it will make the finances shape up better, but because society is changing and because what people want from us is changing. And one of the things I've been really struck by in my time at RNIB is a real desire from our customers and community for an organisation that isn't here to tell them, well, us, what's right and what to do and what's best for blind people and what they need and how to treat them and how to respond to one if you meet one in the street. What people really want is an organisation that understands their aspirations, their dreams, their hopes, and the things that are frightening, and listens to those and uses that to respond and to connect people with information and with each other, but also to be there to facilitate the community doing what it wants to do. The ambitions we have, the dreams we have, making them a reality. That is our job at RNIB, is to make a reality of that. And that's about making sure people are getting the benefits that they are entitled to. And it's also about, and we've talked a bit about this morning, and it's a priority of mine around employment. And whether that's self-employment, whether that's employment by RNIB and the chances we can give people to demonstrate, you know, their talents, or whether it's about people in getting jobs in other places, and particularly leadership. Corinne spoke a little bit about that. And one of the things that, you know, I think has been on my mind particularly recently is sometimes how difficult it is to get opportunities to be promoted, to develop a career, not just get into a job in the first place, although that remains hugely challenging too. So we need to take more action on that and to make sure that people are connected with advice and guidance and support to learn to regain their independence, perhaps, and to be as independent as they choose. Because, you know, being blind or partially sighted isn't a competition about how independent one can be. It's all about the choices you want to make in your life. To deliver any of that, we do need to significantly restructure our services and modernise our approaches. And I and the other trustees don't underestimate the challenge that that will be. And in Sally, I'm absolutely confident I've got a chief executive who's up for that challenge and who will support her executive to deliver on that. There's loads that we do, and there's loads Sally's talked about that I'm really proud of in the past year. There's also some things I'm not very proud of, and we've touched on some of that as well, and particularly in terms of how our implementation of a new finance system had a negative impact on our customers. And I think the trustees are very clear that that is not good enough, and that's not what our customers should expect from us. I just want to mention a couple of areas where I think I see us playing a really important role and how that's sort of starting to shape up in terms of the trustees' thinking. But the most important thing to say before I do is that I want us to be an organisation that is open, that is honest about what's good, but also that is not afraid to talk about what isn't working. And to do that effectively, we do need the input of our community and the help, support and challenge of our community as well. You know, we are a board of trustees and we have a very specific role in terms of governance. The answers really to what we should be doing and how largely lie in our community. And I know they are there. And my commitment as our next chair is to encourage the exec to make as much space for that as we possibly can. And that involving people isn't just a thing we do because it's interesting. It's a fundamental way we do business. So RNIB, I believe, has a fundamental national role in terms of information about eye health and advice and supporting people. Now, Sally's right to point to our increased reach in this area and how many more people are being supported. But I think it would be wrong of me not to acknowledge that we also know how many people are not getting any support, not just from RNIB, but from anywhere. The number of people who walk out of an eye clinic today and go home alone is still too many. And that's why we are putting that national advice and guidance service right at the heart of what we do. If people don't know what's out there, they can't ask for help. And if people don't have information to use when is ready, at the time that's right for them in their life, then, you know, then how can they ever really know what's out there? Campaigning remains a really important aspect, and Fazile talked a little bit about some of the priorities earlier. In terms of you know, making society more inclusive, because we know that certainly locally to all of us, there'll be issues where we think action should be taken. Our friends, our families, they all want to be part of that too. And so the real thrust of our campaigning work is all about supporting us to advocate for ourselves with support from RNIB, and particularly around expert support, particularly around sort of legal rights and advice is really, really important. But there are increasingly issues around inclusion, and that too is changing. So, you know, it's inclusion in terms of, you know, new ways of designing city centres, but it's also some of the old chestnuts about, you know, getting access to rehabilitation services that are a statutory duty, but that most local authorities are, you know, if not deleting entirely, certainly making into a more generic service to support sort of pan disability. We have a really important role within the sight loss sector, and I was really, really pleased, actually. So before I took on this role formally, as of the end of this meeting, last week I joined the delegates at the Visionary Conference, which, for those of you who don't know, Visionary is the organisation that represents a good number of local societies. And I was really pleased to have the chance to spend time with them, because I think that there are... Well, there is fantastic work going on locally, on the ground, partnership working between RNIB and local societies. I think it's also fair to say we haven't always been the partner that those local societies, and more importantly, blind and partially sighted people deserve. So collaboration and partnership working, which recognises the strengths of everybody involved. It's not... RNIB will not be an organisation that is able to provide something for everybody who lives in the UK. But we absolutely can be the place where anybody can come for advice, guidance, and to be put in touch with the right people. And whoever those local organisations are, you know, there's lots of great and really vibrant condition-specific organisations and local societies too. Connecting people with each other, which those of you who know me will know, this is something that I have been fighting really, really hard for since becoming vice chair. And it's interesting, there's been talk about the membership scheme. Everything my colleagues have said this morning, I agree with. And I'd add a point which I feel is really fundamental, which is that being blind or partially sighted isn't like joining a golf club. It's not about a transaction which provides opportunities for information or greater levels of connection. I really think that, you know, being blind or partially sighted in the UK should be enough to get you to the best quality information, the best quality connections, the best quality services. So we do need to make sure that people are connected, not just with RNIB, although, obviously that is fundamental, but also with one another. And to do that, we need to be relevant. So Sophie talked a little bit earlier about the exciting work that we're doing at the moment, looking at what it is people really think of us, because I think we've probably all got our own opinions and suspicions and thoughts about that. And what we need is the evidence. What we need is really robust evidence to support me as chair and the rest of the trustees to make good decisions, because without information and evidence, that's really hard. We need to be relevant to the 30,000 people in our community already, and I'm delighted at the rate that that's growing. And it is a diverse community, and you only need to look at, watch some of the How I See films to see that actually we do all experience the world in different ways, whether we can see or not. And recognising those differences and experiences is critical. We need to be relevant to our 100,000 customers to make sure that our services are high quality and are what our customers need. And I think it's fair to say that, lots of the work that Scott in Solutions is undertaking at the moment will be hugely helpful here. I know because my friends tell me and the people I meet all the time tell me that sometimes there's a perception that we aren't quite getting our products and service offer right and aligning it with what it is people actually need. And so the work Scott's doing will really, really help that. And we need to be relevant to the millions of people who, hear our messages about eye health and how to prevent avoidable sight loss. And I'd add to that, not just about, how to look after your eyes and the importance of getting the right treatment at the right time, but also I want the UK and the world to understand better what the experience of sight loss is like, how that feels. And the only way we can do that is by hearing from people who are living with sight loss. We need to amplify those voices, amplify those stories, not so that people feel sorry for us, not so that people think, God, wouldn't it be awful if I had to do that, but so people in some sense understand that it is a different way of experiencing the world. It's one that sometimes creates huge challenges, but it is as valid as anybody else's way of seeing the world. Huge change is needed to deliver on what I've talked about and what Sally and others this morning have talked about. And huge cultural change will be required of this organisation. We have significant financial challenge, and I really welcome the honesty of and the challenge of some of the questions this morning. It's exactly how I want us to move forward. We've talked a little bit about some of those changes, about how we're set up and how we work. There'll be changes in terms of how we involve people in what we do, and also new and growing partnerships that make sure that we're making the best of what's available nationally and locally. And particularly, for me, the issue of people living rurally, they're currently getting a really poor deal. It shouldn't matter where you live in the UK in terms of the support that you can get if you lose sight. So I'm really, really excited about working with Sally and with the executive and all of our staff and volunteers and with you to deliver on this. And I wanted to just thank you all for making time to come this morning, because your involvement in helping us assess our last year in an honest and open way and move forward into an exciting future is absolutely critical. So thank you very much, and I look forward to working with all of you.
Ellie Southwood there, the new chair of RNIB. Now, after the recent annual general meeting, RNIB Connect Radio's Basil Oxtoby spoke to some of the attendants to find out how they thought it went.
I'm Sandy Wasmer. I'm a trustee of the RNIB, and I have retinitis pigmentosa, and I'm registered blind.
You've just said to me this is your first AGM, but how did you feel it went?
Yeah, it was my first AGM, so I actually didn't know what to expect, but I thought it went really well, because I thought that the members of the community were able to question and challenge both trustees and executive staff. And I think that, in interesting and difficult times, I think that everybody you know, particularly executive and trustees who were involved in presenting and answering questions, were able to really clearly articulate not only where we are now, you know, where we've been, why we got to where we are, and where we're going in a way that I hope gives the community trust in the RNIB going forward.
Hi, my name is Noreen, and I have retinitis pigmentosa, which is RP.
So we are here at the AGM. How did you feel it went as a member of the Connect community?
Yes, actually, I'm a London Connector, so I feel, to be honest, like I'll be part of RNIB now. Yeah. So it's so nice.
So was there anything mentioned that you didn't agree with or that you particularly agreed with today?
I think it was okay for me. Obviously, I consider myself, I don't have enough experience, so to be honest, it's too early to say what's right and what's wrong, but I quite like it because obviously it gives so much information and knowledge.
So you're here literally just as a member. You've never been to anything like this before.
I attended not the AGM, but I attended other events of RNIB.
So it's the kind of, you feeling positive about the next year within the RNIB?
Of course, yes.
Hi there, it's Sally Harvey here, RNIB's Chief Executive. Really pleased to be here at what is my first AGM as the permanent CEO at RNIB. In terms of how it's gone, I've been really pleased. There was really great engagement from the community. We had a number of questions beforehand, which enabled us to make sure our responses were really robust, and a number of questions from the floor. That tells me that we've got a community who are really engaged in their organisation, want to understand it, want to be involved and to know what it means for them. So for me, that was a highlight, having those questions. And I look forward to developing the AGM going forward, because I think this is an opportunity for us to be really clear about what the organisation is doing at any one point in time.
My name is Jean Appleton, and I'm very fortunate that I was awarded the MBE for the work I did through the years for visually impaired people. I've been around a long time, so I've seen great differences happen in the visually impaired world. I will be 95 in January, and I think that the RNIB, as the premier charity in this country, does a great deal of good, but there are still ways that it can alter its ways. I personally am very concerned about young children in mainstream schools because they're not getting the independence they want, and they're not always getting the support that they need. And this is happening to children with other disabilities who are also in mainstream schools. And it's important that children have a good education and for them to take their part when they leave the school and go into the big wide world.
So do you think the AGM has been good today? Do you think it's been a positive AGM in comparison to ones you've seen before?
Well, they're all different, really. This was quite, you know, sort of, it can and I hope will be exciting in the next year, yes. Because there are many aspects that, you know, the RNIB is wanting to do.
So all in all, this year's AGM you think was a positive event and hopefully it's going to be good for the next year?
Well, I hope so, yes. We can all work together to try and get things back. But there's constant change now, and I do think it's important that the RNIB, you know, makes itself still well known.
My name's Junior Sterling. I'm a sighted person, and I became a member before I've even just found out that I'm starting to either lose my sight or something to do with cataracts.
So you've seen the AGM today, you've seen it as a positive thing for the RNIB and the community?
Yeah, definitely a positive thing. More people can get to know. I thought it could have been, more people could have turned out, and it wasn't really good to ask people to come to a meeting so early in the morning if they have mobility problems or sight problems like this. So I think there is room for improvement, but overall, yeah, it's a very good meeting.
I'm Ellie Southwood. I'm RNIB's new chair. So today was the AGM where I formally took on my new role as chair. So I've got Leber's congenital amaurosis, which means I've got very little useful sight. So I want RNIB to be an organisation that's able to support people like me, as well as people who might be losing sight today, or people who perhaps don't start to lose sight until older age. We had a fabulous conversation about some of the challenges as well as lots of the opportunities, and I'm really excited about working with all our members over the next year.
So as your first AGM as coming in chair, you were impressed by the turnout. Did you feel it was a positive one this year?
I felt the AGM was extremely positive, and the reason I say that is because of how honest it was. I was extremely pleased that so many members came, extremely pleased that they had taken time and effort to look through all the paperwork and ask really, really important and helpful questions. We need to be open and honest about challenges we face, as well as all the exciting opportunities there are. And I need to know really clearly from a membership what their concerns are so that I can set the organisation's priorities in the right way.
If you want to hear more from the annual general meeting, you can do so by heading over to our Audio Boom page. You can also catch up on anything you may have missed whilst it went out live on the station. And to find all that, the website is www.audioboom.com. And once you're there, search for RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you to Basil Oxtoby there, speaking to some of the attendees who went along to the AGM. Now, were you at the AGM? Did you have something that you wanted to say and maybe didn't get the chance to grab our own Basil? Well, if not, then all you have to do is get in touch with us here. The easiest way to do that is by getting in touch on email, theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. That is it for our special this week. I hope you enjoyed it, giving you a chance to get an overview of what the charity is doing, especially over the last year, and also what the plans are for the future. It might ask our answer, perhaps, some of your questions. If you have a question, though, that you'd like us to put to RNIB management, then we're more than happy to do it at any time. Just email it in, as I say, theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. Now, on next week's programme, just a quick note, we're going to be talking to Sally Clay, a blind musician, and Danielle Colcombe, a community facilitator who is partially sighted and works for RNIB as a community facilitator here. We're going to be hearing about the issues of pregnancy, as Danielle is expecting a little baby. We're going to be hearing from blind mum, Sally Clay, on that topic and giving Danielle some all-important advice. And we're talking about one of the biggest things we hear as blind people often, and that is, you don't look blind. That's all coming up on next week's The Weekly Connect. Jill off next week, but hopefully back with us the week after here on RNIB Connect Radio. Remember, when it's Mondays from 1, it is The Weekly Connect. Get in touch and tell us what you would like to see. It's your show. Thanks for listening.